This is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
And later on, Building Bridges, the current crisis in Newark schools.
But first, numerous elected officials and Teamsters Local 804 members in Queens delivered 100,000 petition signatures in support of 250 drivers whose jobs are on the line. UPS has issued termination notices to the Teamsters drivers for participating in a walk at them protest after the company fired a union activist in violation of a signed agreement. What began as a routine disciplinary matter has become a flashpoint for workers' rights in New York City. Now we head to Maspeth, Queens, the UPS depot, where we'll hear from Javarel Reyes, a fired UPS worker, public advocate Letitia James, and Tim Sylvester, president of Teamsters Local 802, and Ken Nash files this report.
I'm with Javarel Reyes. He's the fired UPS worker whose incident sparked off a wave of protests at the Maspeth yards of UPS. Tell me, why did the company fire you?
The company fired me. The reason why they claimed that I was starting early.
You were starting early?
Yeah, that's what they claimed. They said I wasn't authorized to change my start time to start earlier.
And this was a firing offense?
According to them, it was.
Is there a contract clause that you're innocent of proven guilty?
Yes, there is. There's an Article 7 that says that.
So, according to the contract, they couldn't fire you until there was some kind of determination by an impartial third party. Is that the deal?
It could be something like that. It could go to a third party. It would be some kind of arbitrator if it needed to get to that point. But the problem that occurs is that they just violated a contract in general. There is a progressive discipline form, and the company just totally overlooked that.
So why did they pick on you?
Perfect target. I don't know. Like I said, I was starting early, and the reason why was because I had authorization from my center manager, Willie Rodriguez, to start early. What occurred was I was out last year due to a shoulder surgery, and when I came back on January 6th, him and I had a little small interview. We spoke about each other, and in it I told him that it was very, very important for myself to be able to start earlier. And I explained to him that due to the fact of the job and the route that I had, it was very important for me to get out there. And he kindly just looked over the top of his glasses and told me to start early. Then he said to me, and to quote him, he said, "Then start."
So do you have any idea, though, why they did this?
I think it was a retaliation of a grievance I filed on February 3rd. I filed the grievance in seniority with my shop steward, Edwin Vialta, who came up to me and said to me, "Hey, Heido, senior guys are filing a grievance, and would you file with them because of start times?" And I did. I said, sure. He gave me the grievance. I signed it, filled out my information, and I gave it back to him. This, to me, is in retaliation of filing that grievance.
You've been especially active in the union?
Yes, I am. I have been active in the union for some time.
So what happened after that? The workers had a protest?
Well, after they brought me into the office on February 14th, that Friday, and Willie Rodriguez determined that I was going to be terminated and terminated, took my ID and everything from me, had me escorted out of the building. We came back several occasions because they were supposedly going to have this hearing with the district manager. At the time, the first time was Monday the 24th. They canceled that. And then we came back on the 26th is when my termination was upheld.
So what happened with the workers protesting?
Well, after my termination was upheld, the guys, our business agent, felt that it was just enough and it's enough. You know, the company has been for some long time now just violating contract in every form and clause. And he pulled all the shop stewards off the floor and pulled everyone out the building.
How long did that last?
The stench was about 2 hours or so. Outside, the guys stood outside in the snow and the cold.
And what was the company's reaction?
Company's reaction was to fire everyone. They told them, the guys, as they're walking out the building, that if they walked out the building, to know that they would be terminated. To which effect, the company did take action on the 27th, if I'm correct in the dating, they turned out and started handing out letters of termination to the 250 guys that walked out.
You got any comments on the company's behavior?
I think the company starting is acting out of standards. They've taken their own standards where they want us to be upheld to and just trampled over them. They failed to maintain their composure. And as a large American corporation, as one of the top 500, I think that their attitude is definitely detrimental to American labor.
Okay, anything else you want to add?
No, that's it. Thank you, sir.
Okay, and I've been talking to Heidel Reyes, who fired worker at the UPS plant in Maspeth, Queens, who's sparked a wave of protest. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
804! 804! 804! Turn it over to Celeste. The reason we're here today is because we're fed up. UPS workers across the country are fed up. You guys come to work every day, as he said, to work, not to walk. But you need to be treated with dignity and respect. You have the support of your customers. You have the support of your local. You have the support of politicians. You have support of the guy going by blowing the horn right now. Message has to be sent to this company. We have a contract. They want us to hold up our end. They need to hold up their end. They signed that contract too. They agreed to no supervisors working. They agreed to no excessive overtime. They agreed to a grievance procedure. They agreed to dignity and respect. They agreed to innocent until proven guilty. And that's what this is about. They can't turn everything into dishonesty and walk people off the job. What happened here on February 26th was a culmination of frustration and emotion from a company that doesn't stop. You can put a tea kettle on top of the stove, turn the flame on, and it only goes so long before the top blows off. And that's what happened here on February 26th. They need to come back to the table. After it happened, I went to Florida. I sat down. I met with them. They listened to what I had to say. They walked out, said, we'll get back to you. They called me the next day and said, we're firing 250 people. So that's what we're doing here today. We have the support of some of the greatest people in this country. The Workers' Family Party is incredible. They have backed us 100%. We have Letitia James, the public advocate here. We have to send a message to this company. All we're asking for is to get back to the table and discuss this and work it out. So what I'm going to do now is turn it over to Letitia James, the public advocate. Thank you, brothers and sisters. We stand behind you. Letitia.
Thank you so much. I've been joined here by some of my colleagues in the city council, Councilmember Van Bramer, who's the majority leader of the city council, Councilmember Crawley, who represents Maspeth, and Councilmember Landsman, who's also from Queens. We stand here today because we stand here with working people in the city of New York, and because we recognize that these are good-paying middle-class jobs in the city of New York. And what should have been nothing more than a disciplinary decision has turned into a crisis.
Yes.
It's not a crisis, not in the city, not a crisis in New York State, but a crisis in this nation. Woo. Because you cannot treat workers just as you have. You cannot terminate individuals and expect that there will not be any consequences. And we are here to say, you deliver the packages, but we're here to deliver a message to UPS. That you will not treat these workers with disrespect, and that we're here today to say that it's not over. This is just the beginning and not the end. We stand with these workers today. We urge you to get back to the table. We urge you to hire these individuals, and we urge you to respect workers with dignity and respect. We thank you all for all that you are doing. We're with you. 100,000 people who signed the petition are also with you. This state is with you. This country with you. This is a union town, UPS. And we're putting you on notice.
Councilmember Crowley.
Brothers and sisters, I am proud to say not only am I here as a city council representative, but I'm also a proud union member. And you, once you're a proud union member, you're always a proud union member. You give UPS its brand, and now they're tarnishing it by not treating you fairly and disrespecting the backbone of their company. You are their backbone. We stand with you today, and 100,000 people across the country are standing with you because you deserve fair representation. You don't need to be harassed at work, and we are going to demand that UPS treat you fairly. We stand with you. Thank you.
I'm Councilman Rory Lantzman. When I heard that UPS wanted to fire about 250 of its workers, the men and women who make this company what it is, the men and women who come out every day and do a tough job, but it's a great middle-class job, I was actually shocked. I couldn't believe it. And then I thought about it for a second, and I understood. This is a company that is trying to send a message to you about what that you don't matter to them, that they can do whatever they want, that or no matter how many years you have put into this company and made it what it is, that they want you to know that you are disposable. And we're here today to let them know that that's not so. That you and the work that you do and the contributions that you make to this company and to this city is not disposable. It's vital. And I know that you're out here today fighting for your jobs, and we're here today to support you as you fight for your jobs. But what you're doing is representing something much bigger going on in the city of New York. It's the fight for working people to have dignity, to have respect. I don't care if you're driving a UPS truck or working in a McDonald's. This is a new New York City now. And we are here to make sure that working people get respect and dignity and are treated fairly. And we will be out here as many times as you need us to be. You are vital to the city of New York, and I hope that UPS hears it loud and clear.
Let me just close on behalf of the elected officials again. My name is Letitia James, a public advocate. Yeah. It's cold outside, but we are about to turn the heat up. And spring is coming. Let me just tell you, on behalf of all New Yorkers, we're standing with you. What they did to you was unconscionable. They should have, in fact, given you an award for all that you have done. And so we're here today because the city of New York has a contract with UPS. The contract is about to expire. All of the elected officials are here to let you know that this contract will be put on the table of the City Council and the State Assembly, and it will not be renewed until they do right by the workers of the city of New York. I promise you that as the public advocate. That's what I put in my letter to UPS. Again, I'm putting them on notice. Unless they do right by the workers, then the city will not do right by them. We've got, again, some progressive elected officials in office now, and it's time that we respect workers in the city of New York. I thank you all. We're with you. No justice, no peace.
Time to stick together. It's time to send a message to this company. 804! 804!
804! 804!
Thank you, everybody. We'll keep you informed as we hear from the company. Hopefully, Public Advocate James has offered her office to meet, and we're waiting for a response from the company. So we'll get back to you as soon as we know something. You have our support till the end of time, guys. Thank you.
We're here with Letitia James, public advocate, and she's at the rally, as you've heard. And why do you think this issue is so important?
It's so important because it really represents the harassment and disrespect of workers in the city of New York. And again, it's a form of union busting, and that's what's happening all across this country. Attacks on unions and terminations of union employees based on little, if or any cause. And that's why we're here today. This is a union town, and they will not disrespect workers in the city of New York and try to break the back of unions. Not on my watch, and not on the watch of Mayor Bill de Blasio, as well as Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito. And so we've come out here today to let these workers know that they have friends and allies in government, and we're going to stand with them, and we're going to use the contract that they have with the city of New York. We're going to use it and leverage it to make sure that they hire these gentlemen back.
It seems like job theft, and I know that you've been talking about wage theft a lot.
Yeah.
Why don't you summarize for us the problem that we have with wage theft in New York City, and what do you want to do about it?
Sure. So I marched with fast food workers the other day because McDonald's and Burger King are making billions and billions of dollars, and low-wage workers who are having a difficult time making ends meet have complained to my office about being victimized by their employees who have stolen their wages, who have unfortunately had required them to work off the books, and as a result of that, a significant number of them are not bringing home the wages that they deserve. In addition to that, a number of these fast food workers are not respecting their right to organize and are not paying them living wages. And so we are introducing a package of legislation, one to report the wage theft to the state of New York, the Department of Labor, to bar any company that would engage in wage theft. Any company that engages in wage theft would no longer be in a position to contract with the city of New York. And three, a hotline set up within the Department of Consumer Affairs so that individuals who know have any information with respect to wage theft would report it. That package of legislation will be introduced to the City Council, and that's why we rallied with them. We also salute the Attorney General Snyderman for settlement, again involving McDonald's, and we understand that that's just the tip of the iceberg.
I know that the proposals to have the New York City actually enforce the minimum wage laws. Do you think that the state's doing enough enforcement on this?
No, there's just not enough inspectors engage in inspections with respect to wage theft. And so we are working with some state elected officials to try to increase the number of inspectors who are responsible for investigating wage theft.
And in terms of having the city set minimum wage and enforce it?
Right now, it's really up to the state legislature, and until such time as we repeal ERSTAC, unfortunately, our fate is in the hands of the state legislature.
And is Cuomo in favor of strict enforcement of minimum wage?
I don't know. I know that Governor Cuomo really needs to increase minimum wage. He increased it in a bill, but clearly it's insufficient and not enough to sustain a cost of living in the city of New York. And I would urge the governor of the state of New York to increase minimum wage and to respect the rights of workers and to join us in our cause.
What else is coming up on your agenda?
So we're trying to do universal free lunch so that all children in the city of New York have nutritious lunch. And so I would hope that your members would join us in that.
Talking to Letitia James, public advocate, the city of New York.
And Ken Nash filed that report straight from Maspeth, Queens.
Newark is in the throes of a broadening community-based resistance of parents, teachers, and long-term city residents to draconian efforts to privatize its schools without the community's consent by the state imposed by Superintendent Cammie Anderson. Anderson has proposed public school closings and job cuts while advancing charter schools. Joining us to discuss the crisis of Newark schools and an exciting program for Women's History Month is the chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, Larry Hamm.
Larry, in New York, Bill de Blasio has certainly blinked and has been forced to be apologetic relevant to the continued barrage of and empowerment of the charter school movement in this city. Tell us about what Newark is experiencing through the efforts of the state-imposed superintendent, Cammie Anderson.
Cammie Anderson is really part of a continuum of state-appointed school superintendents. As many in the listening audience are aware, almost two decades ago, the New Jersey State Legislature passed legislation that would enable the state to take over certain school districts. And, of course, certain school districts ended up being the major urban districts in New Jersey. In the original legislation, the state takeover was only supposed to be about 5 years. And the city of Newark has been under state takeover for now 15 years. And other districts continue to be state-run also. There have been a succession state-appointed superintendents. Under normal circumstances, the school board of a local district would hire the superintendent. We can not do that in Newark, have not been able to do that for more than 15 years. The state commissioner of education appoints the superintendent for the Newark school district. And really, there's only been one state-appointed school superintendent that the community has felt close to, and she recently retired. And several superintendents later, the state commissioner Sirk appointed Cammie Anderson as the state-appointed school superintendent. And put things in perspective, yes, Cammie Anderson is been in the process of implementing draconian cuts in school personnel and school programs, closing of schools. But this has to be put in the proper context that this has been something that has been carried out since the appointment of the first school superintendent by the state. We've seen the gradual whittling away of programs that would benefit students. We've seen the closure of schools over the past 15 years, and yes, in more recent years, that these closures have been accelerated and increased in number, yet they're still part of a continuum. We've seen the failure to negotiate contracts on time, the failure to provide adequate benefits, hours and working conditions for teachers and school personnel, both instructional, non-instructional. And in one man's humble estimation, that is, this is my own personal opinion, what we are seeing in Newark is something that we are seeing, is a phenomenon that we are seeing across the nation. And that is the dismantling of public education before our very eyes. This, in fact, was being carried on even before the formation of the first charter school in Newark, but certainly it has accelerated. And now what we see in Newark and New York and other school districts, we see a bifurcated school system. We see, in fact, two systems of education functioning parallel to one another, and that is the general public school system. And then a system of charter schools, which is a mixed bag of publicly owned charter schools and then privately owned charter schools. It's really creating, to steal a phrase from 50 years ago, two school systems separate and unequal.
Well, it looks to me as if that won't be around too long, that one of them will dominate. It looks to me as if the charter schools are going in for the kill. They're talking about laying off 30% of the public school teachers in the next 3 years and increasing the number of charter schools. That just sounds incredible to me.
It is incredible. And what's more incredible is that there's been a muted outcry from people, you know, around the state. But we are beginning to see now the generation of a movement against this. In fact, just last week, a coalition of teachers and students parents held a large demonstration, right in the heart of downtown Newark, stopping traffic right at Broad Street and Market Street, the main thoroughfares, in protest of these cuts. When you say 30%, that really does not reveal the depth of these cuts. We're talking about laying off possibly as many as 1,000 teachers over the next 3 years. And what will this do? This will double class sizes. It will mean less one-on-one time between students and teachers. It will mean class sizes that are unmanageable for most teachers. And it will bring about a downturn in the quality of education that exists now in the city of Newark, which is still substandard. So I think what we're going to see now in the months ahead is the increasing resistance to these efforts that are going on not just in Newark. This is occurring in urban school districts across the country. And it's my hope that it will in turn bring about a national movement to save public education.
One of the things, aside from its involvement in this issue, that the People's Organization for Progress is doing is probably one of the truly exciting programs for Women's History Month. I wonder if you can tell us what's coming up at Newark's, New Jersey's Abyssinian Baptist Church.
People's Organization for Progress will sponsor a program featuring Sarah Collins Rudolph. Now, who is Sarah Collins Rudolph? Sarah Collins Rudolph is the sister of Addie Mae Collins. Addie Mae Collins was one of the four little girls that were killed when the Ku Klux Klan bombed the 16th Street Baptist.
And I remember that day specifically. That was September 15th, 1963.
That's right. Literally about 2 weeks after the Great March on Washington in 1963 for jobs and freedom. And it was that march in 1963, about the same day as I Have a Dream speech. And in response to that, and the work that had been going on in the 16th Street Baptist Church. The 16th Street Baptist Church was an organizing center for the civil rights movement in the city of Birmingham and in the state of Alabama. And because of this, it was targeted by the Ku Klux Klan. And on a Sunday morning, the Klan planted dynamite under the steps of the church. By the way, that Sunday, the subject of the sermon for that day was the love that forgives. The Klan planted dynamite under the steps of the church, and the blast was so powerful it blew half of the church away. I've seen this with my own eyes. I've been to the 16th Street Baptist Church. I met the father of Deborah McNair, one of the four little girls that was killed. But in addition, the four that were killed, 22 other children were injured, including Addie Mae Collins' sister, Sarah Collins. She lost an eye as a result of the bomb blast and was left partially blind in the eye that was saved. So we are bringing Sarah Collins real. And why is that significant? Let me just say quickly, the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church and the murder of those little girls and the injuring of the other children created an atmosphere that was more sympathetic to civil rights. Many historians say that, in fact, that event created the environment whereby Congress was able to pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So we're bringing Sarah Collins Rudolph.
Thanks for enlarging our sensitivities and the struggle for peace and justice. And we have been speaking with Larry Hamm, the chairperson of the People's Organization for Progress. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.